You may have heard about HS Squared before, this unique summer program which traditionally hosts 75 first-generation high school students for 5 weeks right here in Carbondale, Colorado. Coming from New York, New Orleans, Fort Worth, and Denver, these students participate in rigorous classes and exciting outdoor adventures. But this year, it went virtual. And that's a story we are hearing a lot. What's truly different about this program, opposed to most other summer educational programs, is that students are invited to come back for their 3 summers during high school. Their drive and tight-knit relationships build over the course of those 3 years, and they develop lifelong friendships and support systems that long outlast their time here in Carbondale. Third-year students have been with the program the longest, and this summer, they participated in a leadership seminar over the course of the program. They wrote poems, stories, and essays that gave us the chance to understand what current issues are most important to them. And today, you'll get the chance to hear it too. I'm Hallie Zander, and you're listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program, where we highlight projects and issues relevant to youth on the western slope of Colorado. Kayla Kelly is from New Orleans, Louisiana. From the beginning, Kayla wanted to do a reverse poem, which can be read from the top down and from the bottom up. Listen up as she breaks your heart and then restores your faith in the next generation.
Hey guys, my poem is called Battle of the Mind, and I hope you all enjoy it. I am not an activist, and I refuse to believe that we can make a change. This may come as a shock, but peaceful protesting works is a lie, and we only start riots. In 30 years, I will tell my children that I have my priorities straight because money is more important than equality. I'll tell you this, once upon a time, we fought for freedom, but this will not be true in my generation. We are lazy and ignorant. Adults tell me I only care about my phone. I do not think that society will change. In the future, racism will still be the norm. No longer can it be said that kids can make a difference. It will be evident that nothing will ever change. It is foolish to presume that the future is bright. The future is bright. It is foolish to presume that nothing will ever change. It will be evident that kids can make a difference. No longer can it be said that racism will still be the norm. In the future, society will change. I do not think that I only care about my phone. Adults tell me we are lazy and ignorant, but this will not be true for my generation. We fought for freedom once upon a time. I'll tell you this, equality is more important than money. I have my priorities straight because in 30 years, I will tell my children that we only started riots is a lie and peaceful protesting works. This may come as a shock, but we can make a change. And I refuse to believe that I am not an activist. Okay, so a little background about this is that the type of poem I decided to use is called a reverse poem. Essentially, a poem that can be read from top to bottom and bottom to top. I chose it because I vaguely remembered hearing about it before, and I thought it would be interesting to try and use this for this project. And the reason I decided to have the first read-through come across as negative is because I think that in the situation that we're currently in, it's easy to have a negative mindset about what's going on, and that like there are a fair amount of people out there who really do think that nothing is going to change and that we are still young and have no idea what we're talking about in terms of trying to fight for equality for everyone.
Kayla Hunter, also from New Orleans, Louisiana, is an artist in many forms. She draws, paints, and creates some of the scariest makeup art you've ever seen. While I can't show you the work she produced for her final project, you can listen as she explains her artwork, its purpose, and its inspiration.
Why is it that Black women are being called unprofessional, ghetto, saying they look like they smell like weed, etc., because of their appearance? Why is it that when a Black woman wears braids or dreads, it's ghetto, but when a white woman wears it, it's trendy? Why is it that when Black women are being hated on by not only other races, but their own? Black men, if any, are supposed to protect Black women and stick up for Black women. Why is it that Black women are always supporting Black men and sticking up for Black men, but they won't do the same? Why is it that men are asking each other, which do you prefer, light skin or dark skin? Why is it that Black girls are being sexualized at a young age? Why is it that they are dressing too grown for showing some skin, but a little white girl can wear the same thing and she's fashionable? Let me, one of thousands, tell you this. It's because in America, Black women are valued less. It's because people are afraid of what Black women stand for and how powerful and educated they are. It's because they are afraid of the impact that we can make in this world. They can't stand the fact that a woman, let alone a Black woman, take charge and be above as a leader.
Cecilia Delgado, also known as Ceci, is from Fort Worth, Texas, and also produced a painting about the struggle of kids in immigration detention facilities and how this horrific mistreatment reflects our values as a nation.
Currently, in the United States of America, the so-called land of the free, there's immigrant children being held in cages and separated from their parents. Children ranging from the age of 2 to 17 are being held in cages. Most of these children are alone with no one to care for them. The older children find themselves caring for younger children they've never met before. The children aren't allowed the basic hygienic needs of a human. They're denied the basics like toothpaste and a toothbrush. The children are lucky if they even get a shower. There are children that are being held despite the fact that they have family in the United States. There has been no effort to reunite them with their families. The United States have failed them. We have failed them. So I say this again. In the United States of America, the so-called land of the free, there is children being held in cages. Doesn't seem very free, does it?
Inspired by some of the best spoken word artists of our time, Anel Paolino of the Bronx, New York, created a performance poem fit to compete in any open mic. She calls out racial injustice and police brutality without holding anything back.
This is a white man's world, where my blood means nothing but a stain amongst the land that they claim they made. This is a white man's world, where Tamir Rice, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor took their last breath, and in agony they were reminded that this world never liked them, for they were blacker than a black sun, blacker than the grip of the gun that killed them. This is a white man's world, where black folk get 62 cents to the white man's dollar and also pay the price of slaughter for existing. When I stand up for what's right, I am met with the eyes of police and fear instills upon me. As I kneel and chant, I can't help but think, what if this is where my story ends? Will this be my last breath? And yet the police baton still haunts me as it's drawn, a symbol of power so far out of my reach. I am 17 years old. Is it normal for me to ask myself if I will live another day? If my friends will live to see Monday? This is a white man's world, where ignorance is bliss and people seem to take the movement Black Lives Matter and overcomplicate the simple. This is not an abyss. It is very clear. Black Lives Matter and always will. This is a white man's world, where equality wants to disappear because white people fear what black excellence can do. In my world, melanin is the equivalent to beauty of the highest form, like the Lord God I talk to at night when another one of my brothers and sisters die for no right reason. But even then, it is the universe that reminds me that as folks of color, we are beautiful, we are outspoken, and we are always protected. Under the sun, I am washed clean of sorrow and given life to change the world. Enough with this being a white man's world. This is my world too. The Pledge of Allegiance is your redemption song, and this one, right here, is mine.
Some of our summer students during this virtual program had other responsibilities and conflicts at home. Luis Herrera from Denver, Colorado, was not able to make it to our last class. Fortunately, Santiago Mopocita from Queens, New York, stepped up to read Luis's poem. Santi felt inclined to volunteer and share Luis's poem because he has looked up to Luis as a role model over the years. So for an interesting twist, listen in for Santi's reading of Luis's message.
In the words of Luis, sometimes I ask myself how our world would look like if it wasn't dealing with the problems it's going through right now. Why is it there less love and compassion and more hate that is dividing us? African-American lives are being killed in the hands of law enforcement. Immigrants are being separated from their families. COVID has already killed many lives and infected many. There's more than just this. And the reality is our world is in a tough spot right now. So let me ask you, what do you think it needs? What is it lacking? The world needs love right now, not just from one person or a few people, but from everyone. A love like no other, a way to connect with another to get rid of what's dividing us, a way to bring light where darkness has reigned, and show a way out of suffering and pain. A skill of the heart that lets it glow and keeps it open through torment and woe. Now, more than ever, the world needs all of us. No one said it was going to be easy to get out of all this, to get out of this mess. But they did say we were going to get through it together. We're all amazing people that deep in our hearts have a love that the world needs right now. So let me ask you, what are you going to do today to show some type of love to this world? I really like his repetition of the question, what are you going to do today? Because it invokes a sense of commitment and a holding accountability towards the reader, and as well as constantly repeating that it's not going to be easy, but through it, we will get through it together. And he's a really amazing writer. And I know he wrote this from the bottom of his heart, so I respect him for that.
Ewa Olabisi from New Orleans, Louisiana, caught me off guard with her powerful start to this poem on racial injustice in America. Her words are unforgettable.
Hey, you. Yes, you. I want you to support the Black community. No, I'm not saying do it because I told you to, but so that everyone in this land can have equal opportunities. Now, don't go profiting off of it or boosting your platform, because now that's starting to become a norm. All lives matter. Karen, all lives matter when Black lives matter. Suffering is not a joke, especially when it happens to a Black folk. Back the blue. You only support them because they don't kill folks like you. Every day a Black person dies, but that's nothing in a racist eyes. Freedom and justice for all. Yeah, fake news. There is no such thing as freedom from a minority's point of view. There is no such thing as equality, but I guess that's a white folk's ideology. One nation under God. The God I know does not condone violence. He sure does not condone the killing of the innocents. All we need is support. I want you to support the natives as well, because trust me, they are suffering even more than me and you. But right now, Black Lives Matter. Figure out ways you can help and actually do something, because right now all I hear is nothing but chatter. I want you to listen to the Black people in the community, because all we want right now is nothing but unity. Spread the word, but don't be too annoying. It can be seen as trying too hard or being obnoxious. Even a protest, go ahead, but please take caution. Sign petitions, donate, do something, but don't go out and start destroying. Take action and get offline. Be sure you aren't spreading false news. Do not look up information just to pick and choose. Be true to yourself, because people like you and me can make a difference.
Jennifer O'Gray from Denver, Colorado is a writer in her heart, sharing stories about her identity as Ghanaian, as American, as a friend, as a fighter, and everything else that makes her a star. In this short story, she shows us all of that. You can find more of her blog posts on melanatedconfidence.blogspot.com, but first, listen to her story right here.
Is this seat taken? The older white man in front of me asks. No. Here, let me move my stuff. I grab my book bag off the seat next to me and put it on my lap. The man sits down and gives me a grateful smile. Where are you from? I notice you have an accent. Ghana, I'm from Ghana, I respond, but he looks confused. It's a country in West Africa, I clarify. Oh, he nods vehemently and slaps a palm to his forehead as if surprised that he could have possibly missed this detail about me. So what was life in Africa like? I roll my eyes. I've gone through this enough times to know by now that he doesn't really want to learn about what life in Africa is. He only wants me to reaffirm what he feels he already knows about Africa. By now, his brain has already loaded an image of skinny African children playing around in huts with grass roofs. Life was good. Good, he questions. I nod. Amused by my silence, he attempts to pry more information out of me. Was it scary living among wild animals? Nope, there were no wild animals. He laughs incredulously. Usually I would make it a point to let a man like this know how privileged and civilized my life in Ghana was. However, today I just don't have the energy. Being African in the United States of America is a constant battle between trying to defend Africa to ignorant people and trying to be seen for something else that isn't considered poor. A man that I hadn't even known for 5 minutes was already making assumptions about me based solely on my origin. But the sad part is that if he'd consulted Google instead of his own knowledge, the results wouldn't have been any different. Photos of starving children in Africa are much easier to find on Google than that of children playing in mansions in the very same continent. And the very few times Africa is shown on TV is to ask for donations to help the food-deprived children of Africa. The U.S. needs a reality check. Not all of us are starving, and regardless, our story should not be used for the amusement of others. Everyone wants to play hero to the poor children in Africa while children in the U.S. are being kept in cages and Black men are being slaughtered in the streets by the very same people supposed to be protecting them. Who is going to save them? I steal a quick glance at the ignorant man seated next to me and wish that he sets an example for the rest of America and minds his own business. I shove my AirPods into my ears. This is about to be a long train ride. So this isn't about me. I kind of just like tried to write it in like a different perspective of someone that like just came from like Africans living in the West. And when I say like the U.S. needs to mind their own business, like I hope you don't think I'm saying that like they shouldn't help other people. There's also issues in the U.S. that need like immediate attention, and so we need to stop focusing on like other countries and also like fix matters in the U.S.
Devaney Aguero is from Fort Worth, Texas, and writes this elegant letter to America questioning how we see immigrants in this country.
Dear America, your country runs on fear. Fear of losing a mother, a father, a sister, or a brother. You pass these laws that go against my people to keep us silent and afraid. You separate us from each other because together we are stronger. You demand respect, yet you fail to recognize that our roots run deep in this country. Dear America, do not be afraid of us. We are not a threat to national security. We are a mother who only wants the best for her children. We are a father who works hard at work for his family. And we are a kid who wants his dreams to come true. We don't want to take your jobs. We make jobs for ourselves. We are not a danger to your economy. We are what keeps it going. Our roots run deep in this country. Dear America, we don't ask for much. All we want is to feel safe, to not stay up at night, praying that our family stays together another day. Praying for the lives of the innocent children that you locked up in cages. Praying for that mother or father who you separated from their kids. Dear America, it's time to stand up for what's right. It's time to stand up for the unfairness of it all. It's time to demand our dignity and respect back. We will never be apart, mija, because united we fight, and united we remain. America, our roots run deep in this country, but you keep trying to bury us. And for this, we will continue the fight to rise up.
this country was built on immigrants, and like America like keeps trying to forget about it or like not acknowledge it, and so like they keep trying to like forget that we're like the ones that built this country and like we help keep it going. So like that's why I went with that direction.
During our last class, Jasmine Macias Vasquez, a student from Denver, Colorado, shared with all of us a photo of a protest outside an immigration detention facility in Aurora, Colorado. It also detained her father at one point. Her poem sits next to this staggering image.
This was last year during this time, actually, and it was the biggest protest for ICE that happened here in Colorado. And there was 2,000 people, and then during this, they took down the American flag and put up the Mexican flag. And then this is also where my dad was held. Different shades, different histories, coming together for a common cause, standing up for those being separated, knowing they are not treated equal, but continuing to aid those hurting, touching the hearts of many, kids not having their mothers and fathers, kids becoming those roles for themselves, waiting to be given freedom, separated for long in unjust situations, not having necessities, but those of all colors standing up and protesting, for a change that has been well needed, for those arrested trying to survive. We are all going to destroy the system. Young voices are the most influential, and we are going to create a change. So my dad was there, and then from there, he was sent to Mexico. That detention center is privately owned. They don't really treat their people good. So I guess it was just like a way to show that people are standing up for themselves.
Finally, here is Veronique Bijou, a student from Fort Worth, Texas, who wrote an essay about wage gaps and inequality for Black immigrants in the U.S. She references important research highlighting some of the harmful stereotypes that prevent effective change from occurring.
My name is Veronique Bijou, and I'll be presenting racial wage gap inequality within immigrants in America. Black immigrants have been and still are facing a large percentile of wage gap as compared to white men in America, which in turn decreases the opportunity for Black immigrants to achieve their goals. Black or African American immigrant men have the largest uncontrolled pay gap relative to white men. It's evident that white men tend to be paid fairer wage than do Black men who work the same job at the same company. Even so, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits employment discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. But Black immigrant employees in our community still face discrimination in the workplace based on gender, sex, or any other traits held by an individual. In addition, Black workers are more concentrated in low-paying occupation. Providing that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 wasn't and still isn't helping working immigrants in America. Indeed, the wage gap between minorities of different race tends to be much lower than natives. Black immigrants earn 87 cents for every dollar a white man earns. And as a result, it decreases their chances of achieving and living a satisfying life or getting promoted to a high position in a company. It's evident that even though Black immigrants try to climb the wage gap inequality ladder, nothing changes in their earnings and their dreams of achieving the American dream become far off reach. In 2000, Black women were paid 60.8 cents on the white male dollar, and by 2017, that number remained entirely unchanged. Many think that Black immigrants are uneducated and that's the reason they are stuck in low-paying jobs, suffering racial wage inequality. Nevertheless, immigrants are educated individuals who come to this country educated enough, saying that the percent of new arrival to the United States with at least a bachelor degree has been consistently rising, up to 20% in 1970 to 41% in 2015. Since the level of Black immigrants holding or achieving higher education today is increasing, they should be given a chance in their workplace to be treated equally. Racial wage gap does not benefit us, but it draws us apart from each other, increasing segregation and inequality in our already divided society.
You are listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. I'm Hallie Zander. You can find more of our stories at azyep.org. Thank you for listening. Are you a student between 8 and 18 years old? Would you like to hear your voice on the radio sounding like this?
I showed up because I care, because this is an actual problem in the world. I felt like it was important. I couldn't not go.
Or this.
I let it photograph you in this light in case it is the last time.
Or this.
The only prohibition I see is the way others display a lack of expectation for me. However, this only pushes me further to be self-driven and independent.
At the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program, you can share your talents, opinions, and voices with our whole community. As a DJ, news reporter, podcaster, or even as the subject of our next story. If you're interested in sharing your favorite music, investigating relevant news topics, or learning how to put a story on the radio waves, we're ready to give you that chance. For more information, you can email Beth at azyep.org.